thank you for subscribing to Podcast One Premium.
Guys, for those of us who love live sports, this time of year could not be better. College football, the NFL, they're going strong. Major League Baseball, the swing is happening. Speaking of swings, PGA, yes, even golf. Everything you could think of. The UFC on down, one thing to make it a little bit more interesting is to have some action on the big game, the big event. Guys, do that at BetDSI.com. Go to BetDSI.com. They're giving out action on absolutely everything, including the next UFC. We got our boy, Tony Ferguson. He's going to be taking on former champion Rafael Dos Anjos, and right around the corner from that, McGregor Alvarez. Anything you want to bet on, guys, reality television, you can even get odds on Trump versus Clinton at BetDSI.com. If it is a major sporting or world event, BetDSI.com is taking action for listeners of this show only. If you use the promo code CHAIL10, that's CHAIL, no space, the number 10, they will give you $10. Just to go on their site and learn how to navigate. If you've got the app, you can download it to your phone. Just to learn how to navigate the site, go to BetDSI.com. Enter code CHAIL10. Get $10 free. Play, win, get paid. Now, let's start the show.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday. What an interesting day. We're going to have Josh Barnett in a minute. There's my tease. Stick around. One of the greatest fighters ever. But above everything, a veteran of the sport. We're going to get some inside info from Josh. I'm going to pick his brain. I've already got my questions. I know exactly what I want to ask him. So Joel, let's get right into this. I'm a free agent. George St. Pierre. Hold on. Let me explain this to the fans. So George St. Pierre goes on Errol Hawani's show. And, you know, it's important that the fans understand, George is a hard interview to get. When George had world title fights coming up, and was in on the pay-per-view, when he had every incentive of the world to talk, you couldn't get him to say anything. George just doesn't love to do media, and he's one of those guys that it worked for. His quietness, the laws of supply and demand, you had this big demand for George, he gave you very little supply. It worked for him. Now, he's Mr. Interview, he's going out on Ariel's show. Ariel could not get George St. Pierre if he had a title fight coming up. All of a sudden, George is going on Ariel, and I'll tie these together for you, but he's going on Ariel's show, he's going on these other shows. And, you know, essentially he's promoting something while he doesn't have anything to sell. He's got no fight. He's got no tickets coming up. He's got no pay-per-view date. So I can't figure out, hey, you're doing all this effort. You're out there working, but you have nothing to sell right now. So he goes on Ariel's show. He declares that he is a free agent. And it just made me think of that Office. You know, I always watch The Office with Brittany. Made me think of The Office when Michael Scott was having money problems. So somebody explained to him what bankruptcy was. So Michael goes and gets everyone's attention in the office, and he says, I declare bankruptcy. And he thought he was off the hook for all of his debts. I had that same feeling when George declared he was a free agent. The same way somebody had to grab Michael and go, hey, you know that's not how it works. That's actually a legal process, and you'll have to fill out some forms and get a judge to sign off on. I felt that way when George declared he's a free agent. It's like, now George, you do realize that doesn't make you a free agent. You've either got the paperwork in place or you don't. And certainly, as smart as George is and the right people he's got around him, certainly he does know that. I'm not breaking news right now. But it lends you back to the guy that you couldn't get to do interviews is now doing interviews. And the guy that's one of the smartest guys in the room is now making a ridiculous statement of, I'm a free agent, when he's not. That's either paperwork that's signed or not. So it makes you wonder, what is George really up to?
So I was at the gym, and I finished up at the gym. And I got a text, hey, Chael's fighting GSP. And I'm like, what? Yeah, okay, what? And I call the guy, and he says that they let GSP go. This was the information I got. And I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. The UFC's, that doesn't
make any sense. You don't let George go.
You don't let George go. So So then I got to a computer and I saw it and I was like, oh, okay, that's not what's going on at all. That's George just talking. Now, so then now let's fast forward, because this is about 24 hours. And so there's a game going on. There's gamemanship going on. So George comes out first, says, I'm a free agent. He knows he's not a free agent. Now the UFC comes out and says, George isn't a free agent. He's under contract. Now George's management comes out and says, hey, we think he's under, that's our position. They have a lot of positions. They can either honor that he's a free agent or they can offer him a new contract. So now you, okay, so what's really going on here? What's really going on here? What do I believe? I believe George wants to make sure he's the highest paid athlete in the UFC. I think he knows Conor's making more money than him. And if he's going to come back and fight, from George's vantage point, everything that George has done for the company, he wants to be paid more than anybody else. Now, Kevin Ioli comes out with a article, and it made sense to me because this entire time George is saying, "Hey, man, I want to come back and fight," and Dana's like, "He's not going to fight," and George is like, I'm going to come back and fight. Nobody's ever walked away from this sport. Nobody has ever walked away from this sport. And George is trying to walk back into the sport. And at every turn, there's Dana, the promoter, saying, he's not going to fight. We don't want him to fight. He's not a biggest draw, this, that, and the other. According to George, the information that George came out with. My opinion on this is that George wants to fight. I've never seen anybody talk more about fighting and not fight before than what George is doing. So it's interesting, man. It's interesting.
All right, great. But it does come back to my original point that he can't just come out and declare free agency. I am a free agent. Well, says who? Right? It comes back to my point. So George is smart. I'm not breaking news to George. George knows this. George has the right guys around him. So it does lend to the bigger conspiracy, which I love a conspiracy, right? Speculation is more fun than the reality. So let's speculate for a second. What is that son of a bitch really up to? Is he? I'm going to ask Josh Burnett. I'm going to get his opinion on it. I bet Josh has a good take, being the veteran that he is, been there, done that, been behind the scenes, been in front of the cameras. I bet he has a good take. I don't know that I have an in-game what George's answer is, other than what he has succeeded at is keeping his name out there. No matter how good you are at whatever you're good at, use Michael Jordan in basketball. When Michael quit playing basketball, all of a sudden he quit being on the cover of Sports Illustrated. It gets harder and harder to get media when there's no reason to book a guy. When a guy has nothing to sell, no fight coming up, no pay-per-view, nothing to push, it does get hard. And I've seen George navigate these systems. He's on the top of my tongue every week. I talk about George on here every week. And so does Ariel. And so does so does Joe Rogan. We all fall for it. And I'm sitting back finally and going, this son of a bitch has tricked us. This George, I always see through the smoke, man. I've been to the show. I've seen the strings. You got to be a good worker to fool me. And I think that George worked me. I've said that a couple. I think he has. I don't think George is planning on fighting anywhere. I really don't. And we can't keep our name out of his mouth, his name out of our mouth, because he keeps going out there saying he wants to fight. I mean, why would I not believe a guy if he says he wants to do something? Would I not?
That's where I'm at. Now,
I'm a free agent.
Now, the interesting part of that, or it's not that interesting, but it is the huge part of it, is you know, as a fan, we're like, let's just have him fight whoever he wants. Then you look at the Reebok deal and his sponsorships and navigating that whole storm, and it becomes something that really isn't that interesting to me as a fan. I if George says he wants a fight, I want to see George fight.
But sure.
But on the opposite side of that, sooner or later, you've got to go fight.
Did you get robbed this last week?
I did not get robbed yet that I know of.
All right. Hey, let me ask you a question, though. Would you rather put your money in the bank and earn less than 1% Or would you rather be the bank's landlord and be paid over 7%? Of course, money in the bank is safe. While commercial real estate has its risks and isn't guaranteed. Rich Uncles is a real estate investment trust that pools your money with other investors and rents to creditworthy tenants like Walgreens and Chase Bank. This strategy is used by wealthy investors to collect rent and distribute cash to investors each month. And now it's being made available to all of us, including me, because I have invested. Rich Uncles was started by the chairman of the largest real estate firm in the world, and you can invest right alongside of him. Go to their website and check out Rich Uncles. It's a real estate investment trust, Reg A, Tier 2 offering. Go check it out for yourself. Go to richuncles.com. That's richuncles.com or call 855-RICHUNCLE. Rich Uncle.
Rich Uncle's REIT is seeking indications of interest concerning its Reg A Tier 2 securities offering. Any indication of interest involves no obligation or commitment of any kind. No money or other consideration is being solicited, and if sent in response, will not be accepted. No sales will be made or commitments to purchase accepted until the offering statement is qualified. This media outlet is being paid under $2,000 by Rich Uncles for this single message.
Now, let's get into the show. We've got Josh Barnett, one of the longest standing veterans, one of the only guys that can tie his competitive career back to the 90s. And all the way till today. He's been there. He's done that. He's seen it all. I want to pick his brain on all the thing, all the moving parts in MMA right now, including George St. Pierre saying that he declared free agency.
Welcome to Two Shorts Boombox, where every week it's a party in my studio. Me and all my interesting friends having dope conversations. And now my fans get to join in. Every episode is a lot of fun, baby. We dropping game for everybody, from the hip-hop heads to the entrepreneurs. And check out the new Two Short exclusives, unheard music, from me and all my boombox artists. You don't want to miss an episode. Wednesdays, Two Short's Boombox. Download it now on the Podcast One app, iTunes, or at podcastone.com.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
And there he is, Josh Barnett. Josh, what's going on, man?
Oh, you know, the usual. Cooking, hanging out with my dog, death and destruction, all the usual.
Very nice, man. Are you back in town? Where are you living now? Are you in California? Or are you in the rainy Northwest?
No, I live in Hollywood now for the time being. But I'm not, I don't consider myself a permanent transplant here.
I got you. What is your home gym? When you're in California, where do you go each day and work out?
Well, CSW, when I'm actually going each day and working out.
Does that mean since the Orlovsky fight, training has been on a bit of a hold?
Well, I was training my liver to be more durable and resilient in Europe. I spent a whole month over there after the fight, just traveling around and taking what I would arguably call my first true vacation, not built around work, in about 10 years.
Yeah, good for you, man. And that post-fight celebration, you never know when that's going to end. That could be a week, that could be a month. You never really know.
With the right kind of thought process, you know, I mean, depending on how abstract you want to get with it, I mean, hell, I could be continuing to celebrate that post-fight process.
Tell me this. How are you always in such good shape? I mean, it seems like it doesn't matter if it's a 20-minute grappling contest, if it's a 25-minute fight, if it's a three-round fight. It seems like you go bell to bell no matter what. And I always think that about you. I followed your career very closely, and I've always thought, how is Josh always in such good shape? Are you just gutting it out there, or what's your secret?
I think the biggest thing that I did that I saw the greatest impact in being able to get in such fantastic shape and be able to stay out there under duress for so long is to switch from standard straight cut Marlboros to Marlboro Lights. And I found that just a little bit less of tar was the major factor in cardio conditioning.
Well, that's what Sakharov always said. I mean, Sakharov would have a cigarette after his warm-up and before his fight. So maybe some of your old Japanese times are wearing off on you.
A little bit, although they are really into menthols. And not that I'm against smoking a breath of mountain fresh air, but I don't know. You know, it seems a little too chemical for me.
So you got to tell me this. I followed your career from day one, and I mean, I'm talking about you as 19 years old going over to Super Brawl and taking on Dan Severn, that kind of day one. One thing I've never got to see you do is professional wrestling. And I know you've been involved in that scene, and you've done stuff in Japan. I know you're even commentating with Jim Ross. Here's what I want to know. Did you ever have, what is professional wrestling like in Japan? Is that like what we see here in America, or are you going over there and is essentially supposed to look more like a shoot than it is a work? Do you have any official pro wrestling training? Tell me about your professional wrestling career.
Well, in Japan, it is worked fully in this day and age, although there were times in the 70s and 80s where at times matches, you didn't know if they were necessarily shoots or works at times. Mostly works, but a lot of stuff in the UWF, I mean, there was shoots scattered all throughout it. And there's been a few shoots that Antonio Inoki's been a part of from New Japan, too. So when you go to Japan, or even the training in Japan, they basically train them how to be wrestlers and fighters first, and then teach them how to work a match. Because, in all honesty, it's the most logical way to do it, in my opinion, too, because if you don't understand what a fight is, how are you going to go out there and present the struggle of a fight? Because that's honestly what professional wrestling is. It's not watching the Jabberwockies or a Cirque du Soleil show or some stunt choreography in a movie, which is, I mean, that's a whole different story altogether. I mean, multiple camera setups, you know, 2 weeks to shoot it, completely different story. But it's watching two individuals essentially fight each other, and one has to overcome and come out on top. So if you've never been in a fight, you don't know anything about fighting, you have no fight training, you've never actually grabbed a hold of someone and legitimately wrestled them, how are you going to go out there and show a wrestling match? In my opinion, you're not. All you could do is show choreography, which just means you're faking it. So, you know, there's a big difference between going out and doing fake, quote-unquote, wrestling and actually being a professional wrestler. And myself, I got into it through my old friend, Tsuyoshi Kosaka, Japanese heavyweight in the UFC back in the day. And he was doing some matches with New Japan, and I saw that, and I said, oh, man, I emailed him, I go, I really want to get into New Japan. I'd really love to do some professional wrestling. Can you help me out? And that actually turned into New Japan coming, meeting with me, us putting together a contract, and me headlining a Tokyo Dome show on January 4th against Yuji Nagata. I trained with Yuji for about 2 days. I didn't really have any professional wrestling training. We just put together a match, and we went out there. And from there, I learned on the road and got to train with Nagata on the road, and Mike Barton, and another guy, Christopher Daniels, helped me out quite a bit. Perry Saturn was my first tag partner. Jushin Liger helped me a whole ton. And then I got to mentor under Antonio Inoki and train under Billy Robinson and Carl Gotch. And so it's just been a big evolution ever since.
So what do your matches look like, though? When you're over there, are you doing that? Do you have spots in them, or are you out there like, say, the old Pancrase, where it looks like a fight, it looks like the guy's offering resistance? What's it look? I've never got to see you pro wrestle, and I've always wanted to. I mean, what's it look like? Are you out there and it looks like a fight, or are you climbing the ropes?
It depends. No matter whatever I do, it always looks like a fight. In my opinion, anything can be made to look to be believed as long as the right intention is there. And, you know, Pancras, those were shoots. So, you know, while at times guys would work down to their opponents if they're a lot better, maybe carry them a little bit, I mean, they still messed them up. There was no work in that one there. But with what I do over there, it depends on the guy too. I mean, sometimes, yeah, we have spots because that's who I'm working. They need that. They want that. Or sometimes trying to work with some of these guys, and they don't have any wrestling, actual wrestling skills and abilities, you have to go, okay, well, look, I'm going to do this and this and this, and then you do this. Because if I ask them to just feel it out, there's no way they'll be completely lost. But the best example of how I wrestle is to watch a match of mine versus another Billy Robinson trained catch wrestler. His name is Suzuki, not Minoru Suzuki from Pancras, who's amazing, but Hideki Suzuki. And we did a match on a fight card, actually, for Dream. And it had some pro wrestling matches from the IGF and then fights from Dream. And it was one of those big New Year's Eve card deals. And it's up there on YouTube, and you can go and watch it. But there were no spots. There was maybe, well, you know, there's a couple things like, at some point I'll do this to you, and that's it. And this is the finish. But otherwise, it was play it by ear. Just continue to go with each other. Feel off, go with feel and flow, and maybe talk just a little bit to make some small changes here and there. But otherwise, I didn't have to make anything for a match. I didn't have to create spots at all.
So what happens with you? Take a Monday night, Josh Barnett's at home. Are you watching WWE? Are you a wrestling fan, or are you exclusively in Japan?
I'm a fan of wrestling, but no, I don't watch WWE. I don't really watch any wrestling. Occasionally I'll go out to some indie shows because, you know, my student, Shayna Baszler, she's my second professional wrestling student I've trained from the ground up. And she's really making her mark on the indie scene. Just had a tryout with the WWE. So I guess we'll wait to hear from that. But, I'll go out and support her and other people that I know in the industry and watch. But otherwise, no, I don't have cable, so I couldn't watch it if I want any other way. Well, I guess I could order the
WWE. Could get the network for $9.95.
I could, and it's a pretty good deal if you ask me, but I don't watch that much wrestling to warrant $10 a month. So a lot of the time, if I'm going to watch wrestling, I watch old matches. You know, I watch stuff from another era.
They had a big announcement on Monday night. Brock Lesnar needs an opponent. Bill Goldberg answered that. So now they're going to go do a pay-per-view, be Goldberg's last match. And as far as the booking goes, I liked it. It came out of nowhere. I never thought we'd see Goldberg again. There was no talk of him. It's a big match. Obviously, Brock's going to go over. But I liked it. As a fan, I thought, you know what? There's something there. Whoever reached out to Goldberg, it was probably Pat Patterson or Vince himself. I thought, you guys hit that one. That's going to work.
I think so, too. It's unfortunate that Bill is so much older now, and obviously he's not going to be interested in trying to rekindle a full touring professional wrestling career, nor, you know, why should he? But if this was done back where Brock was coming in, then he could have done the business for Brock, for Bill. And so this would have been such a only better in that, you know, it's a receipt to Brock now versus just being the one and only time they'll probably ever wrestle. But hey, you never know. Maybe they've got two matches put in store, three. I have no clue. But you would expect one match and, you know, potentially Brock goes over. But I just want to see it happen. I think it could really be a fun, entertaining match.
Yeah, I fully agree. Hey, as we talk about your UFC career, you know, you're a guy that's not only been the champion, but you've beaten a lot of champions. Again, we could go back, you know, Dan Severn, the guy of yesterday, or even beating a guy in your last fight like Orlovsky that's a former world champion. One thing I don't hear you doing very much of, and it does surprise me, is I don't ever hear you demanding a title shot or putting yourself in that picture. And I remember when you returned to the UFC, I was doing some of that promotion for you. I was on UFC Tonight at the time, and I was saying, here's the line right here. Josh Barnett is coming back to reclaim the championship that he never lost. And I thought that there was so much power in that statement, particularly for people that have followed your career. You were the UFC champion. You never lost that belt. You went and did other things. You went back to Japan. You had your affliction days. But you never lost that belt. And when you came back and you went on your tear, even recently, main event, stopping the former world champion, why aren't you making those demands that, hey, it's me versus the champion? What is going on in your heart?
To me, I feel like a lot of that isn't really up to me. in many ways, and so you risk coming off as impotent. And I think, if anything, my track record shows, and I've said plenty of times, like, you put me in a title fight any day, I'm ready to go. I'll fight whoever you got the belt on. You know, if you want me, if Stipe, I can go out there and beat Stipe. If he should lose to whoever the next guy is, I can fight that guy too. There isn't a man walking this earth that I'm not willing and able to go out and beat. And if they happen to have a title, fantastic. But I'm not as interested in trying to put myself into this grind of trying to climb a ladder that I don't feel like I need to climb anymore. I don't need to prove that I can ascend to the top. And I've been top 10 longer than, you know, almost the majority of MMA fighters even have a career.
Yeah, from day one. From day one, actually, when they very first started to come out with a top 10 list, you were on the very first list until current. There's literally nobody that sat on a top 10 list longer than Josh Barnett. Literally.
That very well could be, you know. With Henderson and Vitor, Vitor, I guess, is still fighting. Henderson just retired. You know, there's always possibility out there. I'm still in it. Although I think Dan Severn technically may have a fight or two left in him. Maybe something booked somewhere we haven't heard about. I don't know what keeps that guy going, but I think he hasn't found the fountain of youth. The joke ended up being incredibly rude. But you know, however, he's managed to tap into old man strength for quite some time with maybe just a little bit of some Dennis the Menace style youthful vigor.
Yeah, no, and when you made the Fountain of Youth comment, my mind went in a few different places. It actually could have a few different meanings. So I think I was there with you. I think I'm still connected. I think I've got some Fountain of Youth left over at my house somewhere. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Hey,
yeah.
Let me ask you this. You know, there's major things going on with the UFC right now. Let me get your opinion on a few of it. Are you reading what's going on with Jose Aldo, that he's unhappy and he's going to fly out and have a meeting and he's putting his foot down or else? Do you stay up on that?
Yes and no. Like, I'm not getting too in-depth on a lot of this stuff. Look, this is all opportunism right now, and I'm not saying who's wrong and who's right, and I'm not saying anything bad about Jose or anybody taking these positions right now. I have no dog in this fight. But with all the turmoil of a changeover, and with the you have to understand there's going to be turmoil when one company gets bought up by another company. There's always a lot of changeover. But then there's plenty of turmoil that's visibly evident with people like Joe Silva leaving and who knows who else, and rumors of apparently now Ben Affleck has some sort of ownership of the UFC. I don't know. I mean, the guy thinks Sam Harris is gross, so I can't trust his instinct and intellect when it comes to putting things together. But apparently there's WME celebrities that now are some sort of investment.
Stakeholders, right.
Whatever, and then you've got rumors of WME wants to insert its own people in place instead of Dana, who knows what, right? So there's all this stuff that's out visible and potentially touchable. Now, a guy like Jose Aldo, just use him as an example. I know there are actually a few others. His management, I'm sure, is sitting back and going, okay, here is the time that we can make the most use of our issues here. Here's how we can be, you know, while they're weak, quote unquote, we strike. We can try to use this opportunity to perhaps improve our position or to effect some sort of change we think is necessary for our place here as a fighter. Or you know, maybe there could be an altruistic for everybody stance. It doesn't really matter. It's just a matter of looking at it from the lens of someone seeing opportunity in turmoil and chaos and in weakness, potentially maybe able to slip through the cracks. Do I really believe that Jose Aldo wants to leave the UFC? I don't know, there's always that there used to always be that argument of, oh, well, you can just go to Pride or something like that. And I know Bellator does exist, but they don't have unlimited money. And there's no guarantee that they would pay Jose Aldo better than the UFC would or give him more opportunity, because each fighter is situation specific to themselves. And you know, Bellator, maybe they're thinking, oh, we don't really need 145ers, actually. We really need 185ers or something else. You know, it depends on what their vision is. And then when you look at something like Ryzen, it's like, well, we're only doing four events a year. So if you like sitting around a lot, potentially, and we don't really need you as much because you're smaller. You know, they need more heavyweights, maybe. It's nothing's really set in stone in this world in terms of the fighting industry. But, you know, when you look at someone like Jose Aldo, you go, hey, man, if you know, one thing that's always going to hold you back is your level of English, which is arguably the universal language, at least in media anyways, is gonna keep you from being able to achieve greater heights. So that diminishes your stock.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And you know, when you speak of that, that is one thing that's surprising. If you take the ATT, for example, Liberio and Conan, one of the things they made those guys do, you know, when we're talking about the Brazilians that came over, just like they got to be at jiu-jitsu class, they got to be at kickboxing class, they made them take English classes. They said, look, this is a business, and if you're going to relate to your point, the media, if you're going to go out and do this arm of it, you have to speak the language. And it has been a bit of a surprise for me that after all these years, Jose, as good as he is, good looking, young enough, great record, all these things that you've got for marketing, but he misses that piece. And after all these years, he's never filled in that gap. He has no interest in conversing and doing the media and selling that side of it. He's even gone the other way, Josh. He's even given a hard time to guys like Connor for doing the media, where you're kind of going, hey, Jose, this is part of it. This is all part of it.
Sure. And, you know, Jose is a type of fighter that you see quite often that believes that this is truly a sport, that wants to look at this completely in a meritocracy and the idea of the sporting sense, of an Olympic sense. Although, I mean, we could go on and on about Olympic scandals, but let's just take the blanket idea of the Olympics as being that ultimate sporting endeavor in terms of parity and neutrality and merit-based, right? So Jose is like many of these fighters where they think, well, if I go out there and win, no matter what, I go up the the algorithm says I go right up the ranks, my pay goes up, I get to the championship, I win the championship, therefore I get the best of everything, I get the most of what is available. But this isn't a sport. This is prize fighting. It has sporting elements. It is definitely an athletic competition, but this is more akin to professional wrestling and professional boxing than it is a straight up, a U.S. Olympic wrestling or U.S. or Olympic judo or something where everybody gets ranked on these scales and they go out to these deals and you win the gold. And it's not like that, where you have a bunch of neutral, impartial referees and judges, and people pay money to see us fight. If they aren't entertained, if they don't find us amusing or interesting or hate the living shit out of us, no one's paying anything and you aren't getting paid. And that's the reality of what we do.
And it seems so simple. As every word you just said, some people are going to hear that and disagree with you. But everything you said, as simple as it was, that is the business. What you just described, people tune in, you get a piece of it. People don't tune in, you get a piece of that. And no matter what you want to time zero by, it still equals zero. It's just the reality. I'm so glad that you said it, and I hope people are listening. I mean, you're a veteran. If it comes out of your mouth and people don't want to take that to heart, you can't get through to them.
Well, I'm not saying that you should abandon your fighting skills either, because if you have nothing to offer as a professional athlete in terms of quality of skill and ability to compete, that ain't going to help you either. You know, it's one thing that was nice about Japan is that if you gave a great fight and had a certain, thing that they couldn't put a finger on, but the fans loved it, and you go out there and give it, you could be in a pride show fighting with a losing record. But that's really few and far between. And, you know, that's also people looking at things from a different perspective. Now, the UFC uses a more attempt at trying to be legitimate sport. So they try to, you know, weigh people on rankings and get the guys with the best records. And, you know, you lose a couple and the general consensus is they cut you. And, you know, so there's this idea of it being always the elite of the elite at all times. So if you can't fulfill those requirements, of course, then you've got nowhere to be. But at the same time, if you just go out there and fight and bore the hell out of people, no one's going to want to watch you fight, and they're going to want to be wanting to get rid of you because it hurts their pocketbooks. And to be honest, it's actually hurting your pocketbook too. But the other thing is, if you don't have something that even unbeknownst to you that they can market, so with Randy, he never said a whole ton, but he was Captain America. They could stick a flag in his hand. They could do this. They could do that. They could use the fact that he didn't use any mic skills much, and then build some other narrative around him and sell it. If you're not sellable, I mean, Miracle Krokop hardly ever spoke to the press whatsoever. So basically he was, you know, kind of the Terminator of sorts. He didn't really have to say much. He could just sit there with his headphones on and just look mad as hell. But you knew the guy was going to go out and obliterate somebody. There you go. There's something to sell. So unless they can build something off of you, or you can build it yourself, and if you're waiting for them to build your market, well, good luck. They might decide that you don't have a market that they're interested in building, no matter how great you think it is. So it's better to take it into your own hands than to wait for a company to do it for you.
Yeah, I fully agree. So where's a guy like Connor sit with you? You know, you're a veteran that's been there and done that. You get a guy like Connor, younger guy, smaller weight class, constantly running his mouth. Do you look at that and go, good for you, kid. You're doing everything right, way to capitalize. Or do you look at it and go, hey, you're a little disrespectful and you're annoying me. Where does he stand with you?
Well, he's totally disrespectful at times. And sometimes he does absolutely inane, idiotic things. Throwing monster cans, that was completely stupid. But at the same time, he does good at times, too. He has some very quick-witted responses. He has no shyness about being up there, and I do really like his fighting abilities. I find his skills to be very entertaining and highly refreshing in some ways. But it's working for him, that's for sure. And I couldn't look at him and his approach and say, oh, well, this is stupid, or that sucks, and you're an idiot. I mean, I really couldn't fully – I could be critical, but I couldn't bash him because he's one of the absolute top draws. He's got some of the biggest paychecks for it, and he's been able to leverage these things into monetary success for him. And what he's done in the gym has been able to translate in the ring. So he's seen success as an athlete as well. Which is really important to back it up when you make such bold claims. But nonetheless, the bold claims are really being successful. I mean, I think there are times that he's really taken it overboard, but, you know, maybe it really is necessary to be overboard. I mean, people are going nuts about Ronda still training with Edmund, and yet Edmund was with her for, what was it, like 16 wins with no losses or something? You know, I mean, he's the worst coach in the world ever. Well, I don't know if he's the best coach or the worst coach, but I know that in terms of at least the success that Ronda's had, he's been the best coach for her, likely, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I definitely think about that all the time. And yeah, I hear people say he's the best coach or he's the worst. Usually he's the worst coach. But the bottom line is he's her coach. And I respect that she stayed with him and said, look, dance with the one that brought you and you're my coach. I respect it. I don't think there is necessarily a room for change just because you have one bad night. We see that a lot in boxing where, you know, boxing guys, they'd fire their whole corner and they show up with somebody else. But it's like, man, it really doesn't work that way. Through the good and the bad, the thick and the thin, man, your team's your team.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's right. Yeah, the boxing, the team changes and trainer changes. We have these team changes in MMA, although it usually seems to be a more personal thing than anything else, and it seems to take a while. I think the number one thing in MMA, we don't have the team change like they have in boxing. We have the weight class change. Guy has a bad night, now he thinks he needs to drop a weight class because that's the solution. It's like, well, no, it's not the solution. And I always make the argument, man, when I got into wrestling, the best guy in the room was the best guy in the room, plus or minus 15 pounds at least. It didn't matter. When I showed up as a heavyweight freshman, the 141-pounder was our team captain. He schooled the living shit out of me. I couldn't hardly do anything to him, and it didn't matter that I had 100 pounds on him, you know. And when I was at training at Everett High School for the end of my senior year under Kevin Corbett, Otto Olsen was there. Otto Olsen was the only guy to really push me in that room and really go after me. And that dude wrestled 68, because the best in the room are the best in the room. And I don't know, that's the way I always saw it. I'm sure you have your own opinions on it.
Yeah, well, you're bringing back good memories. You just name-dropped Otto Olsen. Otto and I used to wrestle every Saturday. I followed his career, went off to Michigan. You know, he went out to Abu Dhabi one year and ended up runner-up. I thought he was going to go the MMA route. And I think Chris Lieben detoured him in some local show, and Otto never looked back. I don't know what Otto's doing now.
Otto is still a DJ. Otto's a teacher. Otto could have been a really talented MMA prospect. But I think that by the time he got far enough along, he just, I don't think he wanted to put himself through all that. I mean, Otto Olsen's got an insanely interesting story, very difficult, and that kid was driven like an absolute maniac, and it can be really hard to live with that kind of almost near psychotic discipline and commitment to something. And you know, he's got a wife, and I believe he's got kids, and, you know, he's got a life that makes him happy. And so these other things, just the trade-off of doing one versus the other, I just don't think that it evened out anymore.
I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to answer me honestly. How is your football season going? Tell the truth now. How is your fantasy football season going? I really want to know. I really want to know. What's that you say? Your running back has already pulled both hamstrings? Your sleeper pick is still sleeping? Well, take it from me. It's not too late to fix your season and win huge cash prizes at DraftKings.com. DraftKings is the destination for 1 week fantasy football. That means there's no season long commitments, no busts and bench warmers. Never again will injuries have you combing the waiver wire at 2 a.m. Every week is a brand new season at DraftKings. Just pick your contest, draft your team, and follow the action live. You can renew old rivalries with friends, or you can play every week in a 50-50 contest where the top half of the entire entries are going to win cash. Let me say that again. In the 50-50 contest, the top half of all entries are going to win cash. This is not a lotto ticket. This is not one guy takes it all. You don't even have to win to get paid at DraftKings. Just go out and do well. Here's the deal. Start your new season at DraftKings.com. Do it right now. Use the promo code CHAEL, C-H-A-E-L, and you will play for free with your first deposit. That's code CHAEL to play for free for your share of over $1 million in total prizes this weekend. Now, the deal changes each week. 2 weeks ago was $100,000. Last week was $1 million. This weekend is another $1 million. Only at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions might apply. See the website for details. Guys, go in your smartphone right now. Go into your search engine, type in TrueCar, and download the app. Whether you're looking today or you're looking in the future, you're going to be looking for a new car, so go get the app today. It's totally free, now and forever. Here's how car buying works. Do it transparently. Don't fall in love with an ad and then go get armed with looking up the Blue Book price and taking that into a dealership. Don't do that anymore. Get the TrueCar app. Go build the car that you want. Go build your dream car. Type in your zip code. It will tell you what people in your area paid for that exact same car. You take that down to any TrueCar certified dealership. They honor the price. That's it. It's as easy as that. It can be a brand new car or a new to you car. Doesn't make any difference. TrueCar will show you the prices for both. Same time, Save money. TrueCar. Hey, let me ask you about another old teammate of yours, Jeff Munson. Jeff's the greatest. I wish Jeff would come in studio and just tell some stories, just unfiltered. But I left off with Jeff.
Sure.
Yeah, I became teammates with him. He was up here at Quest, and we were training every day, and then I slowly lost touch a little bit. My touch was just through the media. I read he became a Russian, which is true. He's got a Russian passport. But then somebody was telling me he's back in Olympia, Washington. Do you have an update on Munson?
I don't, but I know that he goes between the two. He does have a Russian passport, but I believe he still has an American passport, too. So, you know, just Jeffy being Jeffy, man. What a dude. I'm not even going to go into all this stuff.
Where do you begin?
Many times. Had to fight him once in Sengoku because neither one of us could get a solid opponent as they were trying to find guys, and no one was accepting it. So I had to, okay, fine, I'll fight Jeff, whatever. Not like we haven't done this in the gym a million times. But misunderstood at times, and also he gets over his skis, but with some of his antics and his philosophies. But good dude. I love Jeff, and I wish the best for him. I was there with him in his corner when he fought Sylvia. I've been there for him a bunch.
Yeah. Jeff's a great dude. He came out here to Oregon one time and he fought on Sport Fight. He was the main event and they had a little television present. I can't remember what they were. Oh, HDNet. They were on HDNet is what it was.
I was there.
Okay. So you remember he walks out in a shirt. It was like a Hanes white t-shirt. And I think he spray painted it or took a marker and wrote it on there himself, but it said assassinate Bush, who was the sitting president at the time. He walks on television. You know, when you tell this story, nobody would even believe it. Fortunately, it was on TV, so they know we're not making this up. But he gets to the gym on Monday morning, and the Secret Service is at the gym waiting for him.
Yep,
and it's like, well, yeah, Jeff.
He didn't walk out with the Bush shirt on, I believe. He put it on after he won.
Okay, where he knew the cameras would be on him.
Yes, and none of us had any idea. You know, we were thinking, and I think I might have even said something to Jeff before the fight. Saying, hey, dude, don't do anything particularly stupid politically. And he didn't really say much. And then he got out there and he grabbed the mic and he goes, George Bush. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. And I'm standing there just thinking, all right, just go in the corner, just slowly back away.
Yeah, he said, Josh, he says that, so he gets to the gym and the Secret Service is waiting for him, and that they grab him right then, and they just go, we're going to your house. So they all get in the car together, they all go to his house, they check his computers, they go through everything, and this is him telling his story. He said, yeah, when their investigation was done, they looked at me and they said, oh, you're not a terrorist, you're just a weirdo. And, right. I don't know if they said that. All I know is he says that they said that. And so I tend to believe that it's true. But they did a full investigation.
Right.
And they ruled that he's a weirdo.
I mean, I feel for the guy that had to go through Jeff Munson's computer. I don't even know what sort of dark, unholy, you know, websites and images that he has on that thing or were on that thing at the time that some Secret Service agent's like, good God, I can't unsee any of this.
Oh, it was so fascinating. I mean, he used to tell the craziest stories, and you know him. I'm telling this for the listeners. You already know. But he would tell the craziest stories, and he would tell it all in that same nice, sweet Jeff Munson tone, no matter what was coming out of his mouth. He would tell you the most horrible things, but he would say it like this. And so you would always take his side, no matter how crazy it was. And you'd have to reflect on it later and go, no, wait a minute, Jeff. That's insane. But he would always say it so calmly that it would make you – he was like the Jake Roberts of MMA.
A bit. Not quite as intimidating, even as big as he was. All you're making me want is for a Matt Horwich, Jeff Munson buddy cop.
Oh, jeez.
Movie, but Jeff, I used to rile him up and get him into these political arguments all the time and theoretical philosophical arguments because he's an anarcho-communist, I think, or anarcho-socialist, sort of. It varies, but. You know, I'd get on him about his political beliefs or his philosophical systems and just get him into these conversations. We would get them going for like 30, 40 minutes at a time. That was great.
Oh, it was. Oh, I loved riling him up, too. I looked forward to poking the bear. I'd go out of my way. I'd say stuff I didn't even mean just to get him going.
You know.
Hey, what do you make of the GSP stuff? Are you following what's going on with George? So George retired, you know, in 2013, allegedly, or whatever he did that night. I don't know if you remember that when he fought Johnny Hendricks. He gave like this quasi-retirement. And so now he's coming back, but he's going, well, not so fast. You know, I'm not crazy about this Reebok deal. We got to look at my contract. And pretty soon I'm looking at Josh and I'm going, okay, George, you either want to fight or you don't. And I'm starting to think that you're leaning towards don't, but you're doing a great job with the media, which then washes the back of your sponsorships that you don't want to go away. And at this point, I'm just a mark. I'm a George mark anyway, but I do start to feel like he's fooled all of us, including myself, and he really doesn't want to fight. What do you make of this?
It's hard to say. So he retired in 2013, which, to my understanding, when you retire, you freezes your contract. So whatever he had left on it, he still...
It stops, right.
Yeah. So if he still had 2 years of and three fights left or something, then he still, I don't want to say the word owed the UFC because he doesn't owe any, you don't owe anybody anything when you sign these contracts, but you know, you're still in it together for 3 years and or 2 years and three fights or what have you. So I don't know what the details of that is. And when he did fight, he did have a different contract and Reebok wasn't around. So perhaps that was something that needed to be looked at. But did it need to be a press release? No, not really. I figured that would be a conversation between you, your manager, and the UFC. But so towards your thoughts of, you know, does he really want to fight, but he's using the opportunity to get some media play? You know, it could be. I don't know if he still wants to fight. You know, I don't know him that well. I do know him personally, but I tend not to get into stuff like that. I mean, I figure whenever he decides, it's his choice. But this free agency thing, and he says, I'm a free agent now, and the UFC decided that my contract was not worth the value that it already existed as, and that to rebuild my brand and my name would cost too much on top of all that. And he said, no, well, that's what George says. As if I just straight out says he's still under contract. One could also look at that as if WME bought the UFC, did they buy technically Zuffa, or is Zuffa a separate corporation that exists still until the merger is fully finished, and therefore that's them saying, hey, this is a big part of our assets of why we were able to get $4 billion. So, no, you can't take off. Don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It does get sophisticated on that level. And, yeah, when you look at George and he comes out and he declares free agency, I used to be a fan of a TV show called The Office, and Michael Scott one day was having financial problems. So somebody tells him about bankruptcy, and he walks in and he gets everyone's attention, and he says, I declare bankruptcy. Right. And so somebody had to pull him aside later and go, hey, you know, Michael, that doesn't make you bankrupt. This is actual legal process. And I felt that way when George declared free agency, where I'm going, hey, George, you might be right, but a judge has to rule on that. Before you go to a judge, you can't just declare free agency. And it's like, certainly you've been told this. So, you know, certainly he's got the right attorneys around him and blah, 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 which lends to the fact that, okay, he's just continuing the work and the media tour, and he's outsmarting everybody. Certainly somebody told him you can't just declare yourself a free agency. If some other entity, in this case WME, makes a claim to you, you're frozen. You're frozen before you get to the judge and can make your argument. Certainly he knows that.
Yeah, and I don't know, obviously, all the details intimately, other than what I've read on the internet, of why he has decided that is the case, that he is a free agent. And he is, I believe, a client of CAA, which is the major agencies in America. So if anything, I do know that they're definitely capable and talented at using opportunity to manipulate media, to get their people out there, to make sure that folks are staying relevant in the headlines. Does any of that have anything to do with it? I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there. Whatever sticks, sticks.
But, yeah. Well, I think about, I mean, the same stuff you're saying, I process too. And, you know, we were talking about Jose earlier and the fact that, look, it's not like Jose could just pick up and go somewhere else. Those Pride days or getting those big signings, you know, you brought Bellator into it. They do have a limit. I mean, it's really hard to imagine that George could go anywhere and still get what he commands at the UFC, the way his contract structured in the pay-per-view points. That's where it starts to get tough. Like, even if you were a free agent, why would you, the way your contract specifically, George St. Pierre, the biggest draw the sport's seen aside from Brock Lesnar, why would you want to leave if it's about money? You're going to be taking less wherever else you go. So
I have an answer for that.
Okay.
He, with some investors, maybe CAA, maybe who knows what, goes free agency, okay, boom, which just means he's not under contract. And then they go and they put together their own boxing Golden Boy, Money Mayweather style, self-promoted or co-promoted, and part of the promoting is himself, event. He headlines it. He gets the pay-per-view out of it. They find an opponent, and they go that route.
Okay.
And they're building his own organization. Well, not really organization, but his own. Well, I guess it would be an organization, but not an organization like the UFC or the WWE or Bellator, but just a promotional organization like the Money Team and or Golden Boy or, you know, Top Rank or something like that. And they promote George St. Pierre fights.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Connor's talked about doing that. So, yeah, maybe very well, maybe that is the plan, but it would have to be something outside the box like that, Josh. It just would. The amount that he is guaranteed, the placement on the card, the way his pay-per-view points, which is so hard to come by, it just wouldn't make sense for him to go if it was about money. If it was about something else or egos got in the way, then have your conversation. But it was just about money. It just wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I'm sure that there is plenty of money on the table for George St. Pierre at this moment. Maybe it's less than Connor or Ronda, though. You know, I mean, I can't profess, and I would honestly say the idea that any of us on the surface from what gets released know anything about what kind of money they're actually making, it would be absolutely false. I mean, there's so much that's done at the highest end of contract on the contract side with companies like the UFC that is not in public view. You know, if it says Ronda made $1 million or something, I'll just use her as an example and just throw a number out there. Chances are, you know, there's another 1.5 that's actually going towards her guaranteed purse or something, plus pay-per-view, plus whatever else. Who knows?
Sure. Yeah, no, that is the part of it where people sometimes the media, they have a hard time putting their finger on it because the disclosed amount, they think they become experts in how the business works. It's like, no.
Well, that was the issue with Randy in the UFC, remember?
Yeah.
So he wasn't fighting for him or whatever the key. Or they brought in Nogueira, and then Randy goes, you're giving this guy that much, you know, behind the scenes? Hey, dude, I'm not making anywhere near that. What the hell? Well, you negotiated this contract, so that's what you get. And he's like, that dude's getting And that was the bone of contention.
Yeah. No, it does start to unravel. The psychology comes in there. You do start to wonder, what's the other guy making? That's just human nature. All right, Josh, I'm looking at the time, man. I guess we should call it. You got anything else you want to get off your chest?
Let's see.
Another plug for Marlboros.
Yeah. I do watch Jim Ross and myself with New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access TV every 9 p.m. on Friday nights. It's the best wrestling on television anywhere. I promise you that. I completely stand behind our product. My fighters, Shohei Yamamoto and Victor Henry, are going to be fighting in Pancrase 282. That'll be on Fight Pass. Please take a look. My girlfriend's actually competing in EBI coming up. So Colleen Schneider will be taking on a gal named Lynn. I forget her last name. Vuong, I think. Anyways, the 10th Planet, high-level competitor, and EBI 9, I think. God, that's a good question. I guess I should have done more preparation in terms of coming on to the show. I'll be at SEMA for Center Force Clutches November 1st and 2nd, the SEMA show, if any of you are going to be out there.
Oh, you're lucky. You're lucky. I'm jealous. I got to go to SEMA one year. My buddy Justin goes all the time. It was amazing, and it made me – I wanted everything there.
Yeah. I go pretty much every year and do stuff with my sponsors and things like that. One of the reasons I wasn't so hurt about the Reebok thing, because most of my sponsors had nothing to do with fighting. And then I'll be at Bellator with Bobby Lashley this weekend as his corner man.
Oh, super cool. I'll be watching, man. Tell hello to Bobby and good luck.
Well, yeah, I guess you would be watching. You're there now, right?
I'm there. I'm a Bellator fighter. I'm taking over, Josh. I'm taking that place over.
Is it set that you're fighting Tito next? That's the deal?
I'm working on it. It was supposed to be Tito, and then I heard some rumblings of Vandalay, but I don't know if Vandalay is even under contract. So, no, it isn't set, but man, it's close. I'm still going after Tito. I'm doing everything on my end I can.
I'd like to see it.
Well, thank you. I'm going to take that as a compliment. That's my first compliment from Josh Barnett, the first one ever. I'll take that.
I highly doubt that it's the first one, but all right, we can start from there.
Hey, you're the man. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
See you, pal. All right, Josh Barnett, you know, he's fun, very intellectual as well. I'm always kind of surprised how smart he is. I love talking to veterans. You know, I love the guys that were there before the deals, before the pay-per-view, getting their take on it. And it is refreshing. I thought I asked him the best question of all, and I accepted his answer. I asked him, why are you not calling out title shots? I mean, this is a guy that gets it. This is a guy from a wrestling background. He's got all the skills. He's got all the pedigree. He's on the main events. He's got all the media opportunities. But for whatever reason, he has not tied all those together and gone after title shots. And he said, well, you know, I think it grows a little bit impotent. I don't really like calling guys out. My deal is I'll fight anybody at any time. And I liked it. I liked the refreshingness of it. Even when we were talking about Jose Aldo, he was weighing in about, well, this is all about opportunity. He's seeing some turmoil over there. He's seeing if he can get his foot in the door. You know, he gave these really intelligent answers, and I hope that everybody was picking up and listening. And some of the stuff you even had to read between the lines. But I knew what it was he was talking about. I knew what he meant about how the buy rates happen and how, you know, you've got to have the fan support to get leverage before you can do anything else. So, you know, when you hear from a guy like Josh, I hope that sets in. I hope that sets in for a lot of young fighters. And I don't mean to pat myself on the back. This was Josh's interview. But he said a lot of the stuff, didn't he, guys? He validated a lot of the stuff that I do tell you each week about being ready, about taking opportunities. And he is another interesting guy in this regard. And I'm a big Josh fan. I'm a big Josh fan because, you know, Josh was in the Northwest. We're the same age. He's from the Seattle area. I'm from the Portland area. He and I were supposed to be college teammates. He was supposed to come and wrestle at the University of Oregon as the heavyweight. And he wanted to. That was the route he wanted to go. And a lot of people don't know that about him, but he was a diehard wrestling guy, and they signed somebody else, and he's mad about it to this day that he wasn't given his Division I opportunity. I'm kind of mad about it too, because a guy that works that hard and is that big, he would have had a fun career. But he went right into MMA. He started training with Matt Hume. They brought him in as a young kid. They brought him in as a can. He was supposed to get beat up by Dan Severn over in Hawaii. He was 19 years old. Severn had already done everything that qualified him for what is now the Hall of Fame. He was already the UFC champion and the tournament champion. He was well-established. Josh Barnett, if you can even believe this, Josh Barnett at one time was viewed as a can because no one knew who he was. Went all the way out to Hawaii, submitted Dan Severn with an arm lock, and his career really went from there. It really went from there. And, I mean, he's as good as to anyone that's ever done the sport. If you talk about some of the best of all time, and you don't mention Josh Barnett, you don't know what you're talking about. If you narrow it down to a weight class, and you talk about the best heavyweights, specifically that weight class of all time, and you don't put Josh Barnett in your top three, I'm out. You lose credibility with me. He beat the Dan Severns, the guys of yesterday. He beat the Randy Couture, became the UFC champion of today. He's still going strong to this day, and he'll go back and forth. He'll go pro wrestle for a couple months. He'll slip over and do submission matches, and then he'll catch an MMA on Saturday night against the best guys in the world, former champions, and finish them inside of the time limit. If you have a top 10 heavyweight list of all time, I mean this, and you don't put Josh Barnett in your top three, I am out. I'm done listening to you. You lose credibility. So that is what I think of Josh Barnett. There you go. And he even gave old Chael a compliment at the end there. What do you think of that? Wants to see me and Tito fight. I'll take it. Guys, until tomorrow, who do we got on tomorrow? We got some fun tomorrow. We're going to have Michael Chandler on. Michael Chandler had fight of the year against Eddie Alvarez. He won that fight. He's got some big stuff going on. Wrestling friend, All-American from the University of Missouri. We're going to have some fun with Michael Chandler. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.